Trading in futures products entails significant risk of loss, which must be understood prior to trading and may not be appropriate for all investors.
Good morning, everybody. It's Friday, April 5th, 5:28 a.m. Central Time. Grain markets are mixed this morning. Matt Bennett is joining us. Guys, let's start off with the U.S. drought situation and some weather.
So USDA released weekly drought monitor data yesterday. Heavy precipitation fell across portions of the Corn Belt last week. As a result, drought conditions improved in Michigan, Ohio, and Indiana. Conditions also improved in Missouri and Illinois. Meanwhile, a lack of precipitation caused drought conditions to worsen in Kentucky. Conditions across the High Plains were mostly unchanged last week, with the exception of minor improvements up in South Dakota. When we look at the percentage of U.S. areas experiencing drought, corn country 24%, soybeans 22%, winter wheat 18%, spring wheat 25%, and cattle country 13%.
Matt Bennett, I'm seeing kind of a trend develop here, maybe like an east versus west, wet dry versus wet type thing. So the recent rains that have fallen, we've got this on the screen here, largely favored eastern areas of the Corn Belt, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio. You did get some in eastern Iowa where they've been dry. You got some in Wisconsin. And then you look at the forecast and it's kind of more the same, more rains coming for Illinois, for Indiana, for Ohio, but then drier for Iowa, for Minnesota, for Wisconsin. So maybe that's something we're going to see this year. I don't know.
No, yeah, it's possible. I mean, I think the thing that comes to mind is all these guys have been forecasting it's going to be dry in the West, you know? And so is this current pattern, which obviously they had some improvement, but is the current pattern going to continue? Because if it is, it might maybe lend credence to the fact that they are going to be dry over the summer. Now, I think, you know, obviously wet spring talk's probably a month away, but by all means, we went from what we would call an early spring to, you know, it's not going to be an early spring now. That's fine. I don't mind planting first of May, but by all means, in my part of the state of Illinois, it's way too wet to even think about doing anything. We've had 3.5 inches of rain so far this week, so you know, a lot of moisture in that part of the world right now.
I'm looking at the planting dates for crop insurance purposes. So in the east is actually where a lot of people could start today. The 5th is the first day for central Illinois, for everywhere in Indiana, a lot of Ohio, I believe. And then the drier places where maybe they could be planting, your first date is not till the 11th in Iowa, in Minnesota, the 10th for South Dakota. So they've got a little bit of time, but this could be a trend that's developing here. You know, a wetter pattern in the east, drier pattern in the west. And it's really kind of been the deal for a while. Let's see what's next here.
So the bird flu has expanded into an Ohio dairy herd. The herd became infected when it received cows from a Texas dairy, which later discovered the virus in its own herd. The USDA has now confirmed the virus in herds across 6 states since it was first discovered in a Texas dairy herd late last week. Those states include Kansas, Texas, New Mexico, Ohio, and Michigan. And Idaho, excuse me. According to the USDA, transmission of bird flu between cows may be possible, a fact that they didn't say was possible to start with. Since 2022, migratory birds have been spreading the virus around the globe. Nonetheless, the bird flu poses little risk to humans and supposedly little risk to cattle also, as it appears.
Matt, what are your bird flu thoughts?
Well, her last statement, you know, Kinsey said it doesn't seem like it's going to pose any risk to humans, and not even sure if we're going to pose any risk to cattle. So I guess I'm not super concerned whenever it comes to cattle having it show up. Now, obviously, it's been a different story, you know, whenever you've gotten chickens, turkeys, whatever. I mean, bottom line is, for cattle, I'm not sure that it's that big of a deal. It's certainly been traded, but I don't think it's a big deal, personally.
Mackenzie, any new thoughts this morning?
No, obviously we saw the cattle markets have a little bump yesterday, and maybe I'm being too pessimistic about it. You know, maybe the consumer perception will bounce back and they realize, you know, this isn't a big deal for the cattle herd and, you know, it's fine for the meat and the milk. I still have worries about it though. You know, it seems like the cattle markets cannot get by such a fear-mongering situation without significant losses.
I don't know that. I don't know that the consumer in general even knows that this is going on. I would almost guarantee if I texted my wife right now and said, "Have you heard about the bird flu?" She would say, "What are you talking about?" You know, and she buys a grocery. So I don't know. I mean, that would be my thought. The market, though. I mean, we stabilized in cattle yesterday, but that doesn't mean that it has to stay that way. The chart still looks pretty shitty to me. What else we got?
Oil prices are continuing to climb. WTI crude rose 1.4% yesterday to sell at $86.59 per barrel, its highest close since October. Since the beginning of the year, WTI has gained 21%. Escalating tensions in the Middle East, as well as continued conflict between Russia and Ukraine, are fueling prices. A reduction in the world's oil supply is also supporting prices. The national average price of gasoline has risen to $3.57 per gallon, the highest level since October.
It's a lot of implications here, potentially. Matt, at what point, how high does crude have to get before it starts to support some of our commodities, which are kind of down in the dumps here?
Yeah, I mean, you know, traditionally or historically, Joe, $85 crude, you wouldn't be seeing corn action like we've seen this week, for instance. Yeah. I mean, obviously yesterday we found a little bit of buying, got a little bit of buying going on here this morning. But right now you should be seeing some strength. I mean, bottom line right now is it seems like a whole lot of commodities are kind of enjoying this. I don't know if I want to call it reinflationary just yet, but an event where people are looking towards commodities is something that they want to invest in. But obviously corn isn't one of them right now. So I think that the overall fundamentals of the corn market are kind of holding it back. But bottom line is if crude keeps running, I cannot imagine a scenario where it doesn't actually ignore the fundamentals in corn and start boosting prices. So I would expect right now, if we can maintain $85 crude, it's definitely going to spill over sooner or later into the corn market.
Okay, I've got the Bloomberg Commodity Index chart on my screen if you guys are not watching. And this index is up almost 3% just on the week. And that's because energies have been higher. Also, you've seen, I think, precious metals, especially gold, has been pretty strong. So if you get this thing to break out on my chart at least, which is kind of arbitrary, that 107-ish area, that would be very positive. And that could inspire some additional short covering. There's a lot of other problems that come with higher commodity prices, like the interest rate situation. But this is maybe something to be optimistic about in regard to grain prices. I don't know. And that kind of takes us to our next story, I guess.
According to the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis, if the economy remains strong and inflation continues to move sideways, interest rate cuts may not be necessary this year. In March, the Fed official believed that two rate cuts would be reasonable by the end of the year. However, since then, January and February inflation data have come in higher than expected. As a result, numerous Fed officials have reiterated the need for more evidence that inflation is declining before rates can be cut.
I mentioned yesterday that the Fed heads talk too much, and Kashkari is the most insufferable Fed member that there is. I can't stand this guy. He like reeks of arrogance. But in any case, this news, both from him and Powell kind of talking more hawkish this week, it sent the stock market sharply lower. The S&P was off sharply yesterday. It's not in line for a weekly reversal because the cash S&P never traded above last week's highs. But this kind of ties back in with the hot commodities story, because if the inflation stays around or gets worse, they may not be able to cut rates. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they may not be able to, for sure. I've been skeptical all along, quite frankly. I mean, the only thing that kept me thinking that we might see a couple rate cuts, even in the face of inflation not going away, is that it's an election year. I figured they would find a way, you know, to cut rates a couple of times. It's just a feel-good type thing for most people. But yeah, right now, Joe, I'm not sure we're going to see any of them. I don't know. But okay, I agree with you.
But
nothing. He drives me nuts.
Yeah, he's the worst. Guy. But nothing has changed in terms of the Treasury markets and the rate cut odds that are implied. Like, it's still a 65% chance that they cut in June and an 80% chance that they cut by July. So this is just talk for the moment. The markets, maybe the stock market believes, but the Treasury markets don't. And I would probably put more faith in maybe what the Treasury markets think or indicate. But in any case, I mean, it's all fluid. Commodities keep going higher. Gas prices keep going higher. And they may have to, yeah, maybe they won't cut. I don't know. It's a big question.
U.S. corn export sales decreased last week. Net corn sales of 37 million bushels were down 21% from the previous week and from the prior four-week average. Japan was the largest corn buyer for the week. Net soybean sales fell below pre-report estimates at 7 million bushels. The print was down 26% from the previous week and down 54% from the prior four-week average. China was the largest buyer for the week. Wheat sales were poor at 600,000 bushels, down 95% from the previous week and down 89% from the prior four-week average. China was the largest wheat buyer for the week.
There's nothing good here. None of this was good. The wheat stuff was especially bad. We've got a lot of unshipped wheat sales, and the wheat marketing year ends at the end of May. So you've only got, what, 7 weeks left or something. So I don't know. I think there's going to be some stuff that gets rolled over or maybe canceled. I don't know. There's not really anything positive to say about the export market, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add there. I mean, obviously, the one thing that I've enjoyed, I think we all maybe enjoyed a little bit here recently, of course, corn sales have stayed pretty good. But then this week, yeah, you know, you kind of lay a little bit of an egg. You got to hope that's not a trend we continue to see. I would expect to see corn sales stay fairly strong. We've been really competitive. I mean, FOB values would lead me to believe we'd continue to sell corn. But I think a lot of it will depend once we get into the safrinha crop, you know, what it ends up like. Obviously, we've got some time yet before we have to worry about that.
Corn is still, U.S. corn is still competitive on the export market, whereas soybeans are not versus Brazil, and wheat is not competitive versus Russia. So in those two crops, you've got problems. Corn, I think the program could very well hold together.
We did have a flash sale of soybeans yesterday. U.S. exporters sold 6 million bushels of soybeans to Mexico for delivery during the current marketing year. Accumulated soybean sales for the current marketing year are down 19% compared to the same period last year.
I don't think we sell a ton of soybeans to Mexico, but it makes sense given the geography. And Mexico's been huge buyer in corn this year, which has really helped to support the program there because China hasn't been around. You think China's ever going to be back for corn, Matt?
That's a really good question. I felt like they would all along, but then, you know, you see some of the stuff, you know, canceling a little bit of Ukraine corn and talks that they're going to try to pull back on corn a little bit. Boy, I don't know. I think that they'll buy U.S. corn eventually if it gets cheap enough that they can restock, for instance. I'm not so sure that China's got near as much corn in their reserves, or at least quality corn in their reserves, that the USDA thinks or that any of us have been led to believe. Personally, that's just my personal opinion. And I think if corn gets cheap enough, they may want to restock somewhat. But other than that, I don't really look for them to be in doing sizable business anytime soon.
Yesterday, we mentioned that there was a Foreign Ag Service report out of the Beijing office of USDA on Tuesday this week, and they're projecting record corn consumption in China this year again, which is, that's the trend. They use more corn every single year. They're also projecting a record crop, and China's on the same timeline as we are. They're planting corn here. They're going to be in April. So they run into a weather problem, and you keep usage up. I mean, that's where the imports would probably come in. Mackenzie, you want to run the cattle quotes from yesterday?
Yeah, so feeders were up 75 cents to up 202. Live cattle were up 25 cents to up a buck 25. Box beef continues to trend downward. Choice ended the day at 297.15. That was down 4.15. And select ended the day at 296.05. That was down 87 cents.
Outside markets on Friday, U.S. dollars up a little bit. Stocks attempting a recovery after getting hammered yesterday. Bonds are off. Crude oil is up 12 cents at 86.71 in the May WTI. Have a great weekend, guys. Talk to you on Monday.